Journal article, Carbohydrate Quality in Human Health, a series of systematic reviews and meta-analysis by Andrew Reynolds et al., The Lancet, volume 393, February 2019. Summary. Previous systematic reviews and meta-analysis explaining the relationship between carbohydrate quality and health have usually examined a single marker and a limited number of clinical outcomes. We aimed to more precisely quantify the predictive potential of several markers to determine which markers are most useful and to establish an evidence base for quantitative recommendations for intakes of dietary fibre. Methods. We did a series of systematic reviews and meta-analysis of prospective studies published from database inception to April 30th, 2017. And randomised controlled trials published from database inception to February 28, 2018, which reported on indicators of carbohydrate quality and non-communicable disease incidence, mortality and risk factors. Studies were identified by searches in PubMed, Ovid Medline, Embase and the Cochrane Central Register of Controlled Trials, and by hand searching of previous publications. We excluded prospective studies and trials reporting on participants with a chronic disease and weight loss trials or trials involving supplements. Searches, data extraction and biased assessment were duplicated independently. Robustness of pooled estimates from random effects models was considered with sensitivity analysis, meta-regression, dose response testing and subgroup analysis. This grade approach was used to assess quality of evidence. Findings. Just under 135 million person years of data from 185 prospective studies and 58 clinical trials with 4,635 adult participants were included in the analysis. Observational data suggesting a 15 to 30% decrease in all cause and cardiovascular related mortality, an incidence of coronary heart disease, stroke incidence and mortality, type 2 diabetes and colorectal cancer when comparing the highest dietary fiber consumers with the lowest consumers. Clinical trials show significantly lower body weight, systolic blood pressure and total cholesterol when comparing higher with lower intakes of dietary fibre. Risk reduction associated with the range of clinical outcomes was greatest when daily intake of fibre was between 25 and 29 grams. Dose response curves suggest that higher intakes of dietary fibre could confer even greater benefits to protect against cardiovascular disease, type 2 diabetes and colorectal and breast cancers. Similar findings for whole grain intake were observed. Smaller or no risk reductions were found with the observational data when comparing the effects of diet characterised by low rather than high glycemic index or load. The certainty of evidence for relationships between carbohydrate quality and critical outcomes was graded as moderate for dietary fibre, low to moderate for whole grains and low to very low for dietary glycemic index and glycemic load. Data relating to other dietary exposures are scarce. Interpretation. Findings from prospective studies and clinical trials associated with relatively high intakes of dietary fibre and whole grains were complementary, and striking dose-responsive evidence indicates that the relationship to several non-communicable diseases could be causal. Implementation of recommendations to increase dietary fibre intake and to replace refined grains with whole grains is expected to benefit human health. A major strength of the study was the ability to examine key indicators of carbohydrate quality in relation to a range of non-communicable disease outcomes from cohort studies and randomised control trials in a single study. Our findings are limited to risk reduction in the population at large rather than those with chronic disease. I'm now going to read just the introduction and the discussion from this paper. Introduction. Before the mid-20th century, carbohydrates were principally regarded as an energy source, and nutrition recommendations suggested that carbohydrates should contribute to the energy deficit remaining after taking into account recommended intakes of fat and protein. From the mid-1950s,
awareness increased of the potential of sugar, principally sucrose, to increase the risk of dental caries. And in the 1960s, the view that sugar was a major cause of obesity, type 2 diabetes and cardiovascular disease was promoted. A substantial body of experimental and epidemiological and clinical trial data have accumulated since those early observations on the basis of extensive systematic reviews and meta-analysis. In 2015, WHO issued a recommendation that individuals reduce intake to less than 10% of total energy. They also issued a conditional recommendation suggesting that even greater benefit could accrue if intakes of sugar are less than 5% of total energy. Similar recommendations have been made by national governments and professional organisations worldwide. It is more than half a century since epidemiological observations, largely in Africa, suggested that processing of cereal-based foods, grains, with removal of what came to be called dietary fibre, rather than excessive intakes of sugar, were key determinants of both cardiometabolic and lower large bowel diseases. Nevertheless, until relatively recently, rather less attention has been given to starches and dietary fibre. The other major components of dietary carbohydrate. Although nutrition guidelines issued by many governments and professional organisations encourage increased consumption of fruits, vegetables and whole grains, fewer quantitative guidelines for sources and intakes of dietary fibres and starches are available. We report here on indicators of carbohydrate quality and non-communicable disease, NCDs, incidence, mortality and risk factors. This study is essential at this time of increasing interest in the area of nutrition and NCDs. A growing knowledge of the impact of carbohydrate intake on public health, the research was commissioned by WHO to inform the development of updated recommendations regarding carbohydrate intake. Discussion. Higher intakes of total dietary fibre or whole grains are associated with reduced incidence of mortality from several non-communicable diseases. Less useful markers of carbohydrate quality are glycemic index, glycemic load, and sources of dietary fibre, in which inconsistent findings or insufficient data provide evidence of low quality or very low quality. In randomised trials, higher intakes of dietary fibre reduced body weight and lowered blood cholesterol and systolic blood pressure. These findings are supported by cohort studies, which report reduced risk of coronary heart disease, incidence and mortality, and incidence of diabetes. The consistency between the trial and the prospective study results, together with the dose-response relationship, provides support that the effect on cardiometabolic disease. Additionally, prospective studies show striking reductions in and dose-response relationships with all-cause mortality, total cancer deaths, total cardiovascular disease deaths and incidence, stroke incidence, and incidence of cholesterol, colorectal, breast, and esophageal cancer. For several of these outcomes, the dose response is linear. These findings, together with the comparisons of clinical outcomes among individuals with different intakes of dietary fibre, suggest that individual adult intakes of total dietary fibre should be no less than 25 to 29 grams per day, with additional benefits likely to accrue with higher intakes. Population intakes in this range are reported in some countries, but the majority of individuals globally consume less than 20 grams per day. Broadly, similar tests were apparent in the prospective studies that examined cereal fibre, typically the largest contributor to total dietary fibre. Limited data were available regarding specific sources, e.g. legumes, fruits or vegetables, or subcategories, e.g. soluble, insoluble or extracted, of dietary fibre. The result of whole grain foods are similar to those for dietary fibre. Prospective studies showed a reduction in all-cause mortality, coronary heart disease, cancer deaths, incidence of type 2 diabetes and stroke mortality. As with dietary fibre, the observed reductions in risk are considerably typical around tw- considerable, typically around 20%, with significant dose-response relationships. The randomized controlled trials involving an increase in the intake of whole grains showed reduction in body weight and cholesterol. The similar protective effects of higher intakes of whole grain foods and of dietary fiber suggest that the beneficial effects of whole grains could be because of their high dietary fiber content. The GRADE criteria categorizes the evidence linking most clinical outcomes with dietary fibers as moderate, as with whole grains as low quality. This could reflect the high fiber content of whole grains. Dietary starch can be divided into several categories, although rarely are measurements made of these individual components. However, the glycemic index of foods containing starch, or the overall glycemic load of meals or diets including starchy foods, provide measures of starch quality and are widely reported. We found that diets with lower overall glycemic index appear to be associated with a reduced risk of stroke and type 2 diabetes incidence. However, the risk estimates, other than for stroke mortality, are modest when compared with those for dietary fiber. And following sensitivity analysis, were reduced and associated with CIs that included 1.0. The findings from prospective studies of glycemic loads are inconsistent. The results from trials showing no consistent benefit on clinical outcomes when changing the glycemic index of a diet. A major strength of the present study is that it has related key markers of carbohydrate quality to total mortality, and mortality an instance of the major nutrition-related non-communicable diseases. Additionally, prospective studies have been considered alongside randomized control trials. Other review and meta-analysis have reported on a single indicator of carbohydrate quality and one or more outcomes. Our approach has enabled us to use these indicators of carbohydrate quality to provide a stronger justification than has previously been available for quantitative recommendations of daily fiber intake. The evidence for the associations between the quality markers and outcomes was most frequently rated as moderate or low rather than high, which could be regarded as a limitation. However, this limitation is an inevitable consequence of the use of GRADE criteria for assessment, which typically requires data to be from randomized control trials with disease endpoints to be rated as high. Furthermore, with the GRADE approach, downgrading frequently occurs because of unexplained heterogeneity in the results of different studies, even when all results follow similar trends. This heterogeneity might be a consequence of studies being done in diverse populations or as a result of different methods of measuring dietary intake. Regarding the associations reported here between dietary fiber and whole grains and a wide range of clinical outcomes, the consistency of the findings, the striking dose-response relationship, and the substantial body of mechanistic evidence all contribute to the total body of evidence and increase our confidence in the findings. Our findings are broadly similar to other reviews and meta-analysis that have reported on the association between dietary fiber and whole grains and one or more disease outcomes. However, there is less consistency in our findings than in earlier reports regarding the potential benefit of low glycemic index or glycemic load diets. Three systematic reviews have shown a reduced incidence of type 2 diabetes associated with the consumption of diets of lower glycemic index or glycemic load. Although the effect was modest when compared with the protective effect of total dietary fiber or whole grains. In the present study, sensitivity analysis due to high heterogeneity showed a reduced risk reduction and CIs included 1.0. A review of prospective studies by Churati and colleagues suggested a small but significant increase in colorectal cancer incidence associated with diets with high glycemic index or glycemic load. This finding was subject to high unexplained heterogeneity and included retrospective case control studies, which could be subject to dietary recall bias. Other studies have reported a low incidence of stroke and coronary heart disease among individuals consuming low glycemic index or glycemic load diets. Whereas we found a reduced risk of stroke only, we were unable to provide support for an effect. We were unable to provide support for an effect of low glycemic index or glycemic load diets on hemoglobin A or blood cholesterol, which have been reported in many short-term, typically 4 to 6 weeks, and medium-term, typically 8 to 10 week trials. However, we excluded trials that involved only people with diabetes or marked hyperlipidemia, who were the participants in the majority of trials reporting reduction in these important risk indicators. Our study does not exclude the value of these indicators of carbohydrate quality in the clinical context. Consumption of whole grains offer a useful means of increasing dietary fibre intake and reducing risk of non-communicable diseases. However, fruit and vegetables are also important contributors to daily fibre intake, dietary fibre intake. We did not specifically explore the relationship between fruit and vegetable consumption and the non-communicable diseases given the 2007 systematic review and meta-analysis by Anu and colleagues. They reported risk reductions of around 10% per 200 gram fruit and vegetables combined for coronary heart disease, stroke, and total mortality, and smaller but significant reductions for total cardiovascular disease and cancer. Appreciable dose response effects were apparent for most outcomes up to 800 grams per day. Inverse association was observed between the intake of apples, pears, citrus fruits, green leafy vegetables, cruciferous vegetables and salad, and cardiovascular disease and all-cause mortality. Intake of green or yellow vegetables and cruciferous vegetables were inversely associated with total cancer risk. In addition to fibre, fruits and vegetables may contain other nutrients that are potentially protective and confer some risk reduction. The benefits of fibre are supported by over 100 years of research into chemistry, physical properties, physiological and metabolic effects. Fibre-containing foods should be chewed before passing through the stomach and into the small bowel, where they affect satiety, glucose and insulin response, and lipid absorption. Although more recent systematic reviews have shown only small effects on appetite, satiety or blood lipids, these studies have been done largely with defined fibre supplements rather than whole foods. Whole foods that require chewing and retain much of their structure in the gut are more likely to increase satiety through various mechanisms, leading to weight loss and modulation of carbohydrate and lipid metabolism. In the large bowel, fibre is almost completely broken down by the resistant microflora in a series of anaerobic reactions known as fermentation. The gut microbiota play many important roles in human health, including protecting against pathogens, development of gut immune system, vitamin synthesis, metabolism of xenobiotics, and might be involved in complex gut-brain communication. However, the principal function of the microbiome is digestion of fibre and other carbohydrates that escape breakdown in the small bowel, and it is the availability of fibre in the diet that dominates the metabolism of the gut microbiome and leads to protection from conditions such as colorectal cancer. This coming together of the epidemiological and experimental work on fibre allows conclusions to be drawn that increased fibre intakes should result in improvements in population health. Although we have not considered the evidence regarding total carbohydrate intake, epidemiological evidence and long-term clinical trials suggest that a wide range of intakes is acceptable, a finding that is endorsed by authoritative dietary guidelines. Our study contributes to the growing body of evidence that carbohydrate quality rather than quantity determines major health outcomes. Translating these findings regarding dietary fibre and whole grains into dietary advice for individuals and populations should be accompanied by a caveat. Dietary fibre, as defined by Codex Alimentarius, is naturally occurring in food, but can be extracted from foods or synthesized and added to manufactured foods. The large body of literature that contributed to this article and other systematic reviews and meta-analysis related principally to fibre-rich foods, as most of the studies were undertaken before synthetic and extracted fibre were widely used. The concept of whole grain food has also changed appreciably. Whole grain foods are required to have a nutrient composition similar to that of the original grain, without regard to the degree of processing. Many breakfast cereals and other manufactured so-called whole grain products are more highly processed than they were in the past. Scarce but quite striking evidence exists that the consumption of whole grains that have undergone increased processing can result in deterioration of several biomarkers of cardiometabolic disease. As these are relatively recent developments, no epidemiological evidence exists of the consequences of such changes in the food supply on clinical outcomes and mortality. Until evidence is available, it seems appropriate that dietary advice should emphasise the benefits of naturally occurring dietary fibre in whole grains, vegetables and fruits that have been minimally processed. Substantial evidence has provided support for the adverse consequences of high intakes of sugar-sweetened beverages, and reducing the intake of free sugars is highly recommended. Our findings, based on a series of systematic reviews and meta-analysis, provide convincing evidence for the importance of including advice regarding the nature and source of other carbohydrates in dietary guidelines aimed at reducing the risk of non-communicable diseases. The type of study we have considered did not identify risks associated with dietary fibre. However, high intakes might be associated with deleterious effects in populations with borderline iron or mineral status, among whom very high whole grain intakes could further compromise iron status. High intakes of dietary fibre and whole grains are more clearly associated with good health outcomes than measures of glycemic index or glycemic load. Although glycemic index provides a measure of the glycemic potential of the carbohydrate content of food, some low glycemic index food might have other attributes that are not health promoting. Food containing added fructose or sucrose and composite foods containing both saturated fat and carbohydrates, e.g. confectionery products, can have a low glycemic index. Our complementary findings from randomized controlled trials and prospective studies, together with the dose response effects supported by much experimental work, show that diets characterized by a low content of dietary fiber contribute to various non-communicable diseases, and the implementation of qualitative recommendations of dietary fiber intake will be beneficial. Intakes in the range of 25 to 29 grams daily are adequate, while the dose response data suggests the amount greater than 30 grams per day confer additional benefits. Given that most people worldwide currently consume less than 20 grams of dietary fibre per day, reinforcement of relevant nutrition policy will be required to achieve the potential reduction in non-communicable diseases.